Welcome, welcome, welcome. I want to welcome my guests, Mickey and Lisa Barber, the Barber Twins, a.k.a. Before we jump into your story too much, I also want to interview my co-host, Ashley Kelly, representing the British Virgin Islands and Olympian, and also a 200-400 runner. So joining me to help get this conversation going, I appreciate you, Ashley, for joining me. So Mickey and Lisa. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. I talk too much.
No, see, I'm here to balance you out, keep you from being reckless, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm for talking too much. I appreciate it. So Mickey and Lisa, okay, you two have been super well known in track and field for a while. Back in the Jersey days, you guys were all stars. I actually went to high school in Jersey. And so yeah. I used to see y'all. Yeah, I know. I wasn't good enough, so I wasn't in the good people circles at that point. But I was aware of y'all. Probably slightly, I'm embarrassed myself, probably partially why I went to South Carolina as well. Not just y'all. I'll give y'all like a 5%.
The secrets are coming out.
What's that?
The secrets are all coming out
now. Yeah. Oh, that's the whole point of this. The secrets got to come out. So, you know.
I didn't know we were in that decision-making process. I don't care if it's a drop list. So, hey.
The whole point is that you two were like superstars when I went to high school. And, you know, it's really cool to get to sit here and talk to you. I want to hear about your journey, how you got into track and field. You know, I just tons of articles in Montclair, but I want to hear it from you, how you guys got going. I want to hear about, you know, going to South Carolina, everything. Tell me, you know, whatever you feel like chatting about. So, I mean, when did it get started? Why track?
Okay, I'll go first.
You go first.
Yeah. Well, I'm Mickey Barber. We both started running track our freshman year of high school. Our mother and father, they wanted us to join a club or a team or something just to have something to do after school, extracurricular activity. Mm. So we tried to join a bunch of clubs.
The hiking club.
The key club.
Yeah.
What is the key club?
It's a club.
I don't know. Inquiring minds would like to know what the key club is.
We went the first day, but we didn't really go, so we never found that out. And then we joined a track team. And the track team was cool. We had the best coaches in the world, the best teammates in the world. Mm-hmm. And it was just great camaraderie with the guys and the girls. And we're both competitors because we've always been athletic our whole life because we grew up on the best street in the world.
Madison Avenue.
You know, with the best athletes in the world. So we were always playing and running, doing something. And when we joined track, it just fit. And actually, Aaliyah Williams, who went to Texas, is how we got into it, the Williams family. They live right across the street from us. So we saw her in a magazine and she was running for Colgate games in middle school. I'm like, she's a superstar. You're really in a magazine. Mm-hmm. So then we joined a track team and it was like, track is cool. And I started running the 400. I ran everything my freshman year sprints. And the 400, I ran a relay, the last track meet of the year. And they're like, wow, you split 60 point, I'm like, what's that mean? What's your PR? I'm like, I don't know. And I just stuck with the 400 from that day on. Mm-hmm. And then from my freshman year to my senior, I became national champion by my senior year. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, like, I just love track and field. And there's not from one day from that day till now where I didn't love it. So it was just a blessing. And then I went to South Carolina.
Yes. And well, she already pretty much gave the intro. And my name is Lisa. And I started running the 100 and the 200. And same thing. I didn't know anything about times. And I didn't even know what a 200 was. Like, I didn't really know about track like that. I just knew about racing in the street and stuff like that. And I started sprinting, and by the time my senior year too, I became the high school national champion in the 100 and the 200, and then we went to South Carolina.
Okay.
So was there any point that you guys were going to decide to go to different colleges?
No. See, our college decision making plan, we didn't sign till super late, I think. And
we signed in like May, June, like late senior year.
Yeah. We went to Ohio State, Villanova, Chapel Hill,
in South Carolina.
We went on four trips. We had letters from every school in the country, both for the national champions, and we went to those schools. We never came to the West Coast, but
yeah, that might have been a different decision.
We probably would have been out west if we would have came, but we were like, nah, that's kind of far. We don't want to do that. And so when we got to South Carolina, it was just like,
It just felt like home. And all the schools are great, but when we got to South Carolina, we just loved it. And we weren't, we weren't going separate. So I think the West Coast schools knew, like, now.
And I remember Texas, they had a lot of seniors already. Mm-hmm. And since we signed late, like, they only had, like, one scholarship left. And we were like, no, we're not separating.
So, like I was saying, I was in Jersey. Jersey track was crazy. And y'all were pretty, you know, y'all were dominating out there. And so for me, it's like it had to be more than just a hobby that you picked up. Or was it? Was it just, you know, y'all took the track and just were just that good? Or was there something else that, you know, that made track the thing? Because, you know, you two, it's so funny. Like in high school in Jersey, I didn't really find at first track was a big thing. And then it started like really popping off into, you know, in my mind, Jersey at the time was one of the most competitive track states. So y'all winning stuff in Jersey, it's like on a national level, you're really good. I ran on some 4x4 and we, you know, high school time, we're running like 320s and Camden's out here running like 309.
Oh, I remember Camden.
Mm-hmm. Jersey was the real deal. So, and Jersey is tough too. So what is it that, you know, I know there's not a whole lot of options for, we're probably a whole lot of options for different sports, but did you guys just take the track or was there anything else about it?
Yeah, there's a whole lot of options for sports that, I mean, we played softball in middle school. We were undefeated. We were the Reds. So that was a team sport.
Undefeated. So y'all were good anyway.
Yeah, we were good. You know, I mean, I just know we were athletic. I didn't think we were, but like our whole childhood was just outside playing.
Oh, yeah.
It was. And we didn't even know how good we were, especially when we started running track. Because when we started running track, everybody already ran track already. So they knew what was going on. And I'm like, oh,
what's this?
What's the block start? What's the block? But then once we started running, it was like, oh, this is cool.
This is
like,
fun.
We love running. And our teammates were cool. The Ms. and Mrs. Race Bobby and Doris Ellis, rest in peace, Miss Ellis. It was just, we loved it. We just matched and we had fun. It wasn't like, some of the workouts we had were hard.
We look back like 2200s. Like, I can't even.
But we had fun.
In the snow.
Shoveling out lane one.
Yeah, the snow. Yeah, no, like, I don't even talk
but
about
we did it. I don't know, like, 40 degrees, like, oh, it's warm. Like, what? I live in LA now, so like, 40 it's not degrees. 70 and sunny. It's like, I'm not going outside.
Cold.
That's how it is. But growing up in Jersey, like, track was big. It was big. We just didn't do it until high school.
Yeah.
I mean,
Colgate games,
yeah. And
Colgate was big.
I've heard of it, but once we got that track bug, we just did it, and it was a hobby. It wasn't even a hobby. Like, oh, we're running track. We're gonna run track.
Keep going. Y'all went all in. So who was the everyone I talked to? There's somebody who kept them at practice, kept them on top of it. So who was that person for you two? Kept you guys at practice, made sure you were there. You didn't give up. You didn't decide to go do something else.
I mean,
Mr. Spivey, our coach, but he didn't have to push it.
So I was just motivated. This is
My parents thought we were lying at first.
They didn't know you were going to track practice.
Not at first. They thought we were like, so we would get home at like 7, you know, so they're like, are y'all really going to practice? But then they saw we started coming home sore and we could like barely walk. They were like, oh, they're serious, you know, like. We thought we might have been hanging out or stuff, which was no. And we just stuck with it. You know, we really did have fun. I think that's what kept us going is because it wasn't forced. It was competitive. It wasn't forced. We meshed with everybody. And then we were getting better at something. And every weekend was like, oh, you PR. Move up. A new PR. Oh, county champion. This champion, and it's like, oh, I might be kind of good. Like, you know, it was like that.
It's like scholarships. Oh, okay.
That's what, and it just kept getting better.
When did that scholarship stuff come into play? Like, when was it like, oh, wait, I can go to school with this?
The end of sophomore year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's early. I think people like on you guys early.
Yeah. It was like Duke, Cornell, Princeton, UVA, USC, Texas, and it was like, wow, you know, like,
so by our senior year, everybody wanted us.
Yeah.
And Ashley, so y'all were thinking, like, okay, we good.
Yeah.
Like, this is real.
Yeah. Mickey always knew she was really good. It just, it took me a little while to be like, oh, wait a minute. I might be able to do something too. And then, like, it gave me more confidence in my, in track and my academics.
And Mickey went straight for the quarter. So that's a big, big decision.
I didn't know what I was doing. Like, what's a 400? I don't know. I really didn't know anything about it. So when I ran it, they told me how good I ran. And I'm like, okay. And then I just was like, oh, I can do this. I love the 400 for some reason.
But I see the 400 as a love-hate relationship. But if you love it, great.
I know. I'm trying to get that love back sometimes. But, like, I don't know. I just stuck with it. And then, I mean, once I got to college, I just remember the first week of practice. I just remember it was the first week of something, and they were like, oh, Mickey's taking off too fast, or I did something extra. And I was like, yeah, I am. And I just stuck with it from that. And me and my teammate, Demetria Washington, and it was just us two, like, battling every Monday was like a track meet.
Yeah, South Carolina.
All of us. So
yeah, it was. It was real.
Yeah. How did that feel, going from, like, being the top every weekend, breaking records, to being in the college program and having people who are just as good as you competing against you each day?
I mean, it was good. I knew that the competition was going to be tough, and that our teammates were good. That's why I went, because I was like, oh, she's going there. We had, like, the number two recruiting class of our year. I think we didn't have number one.
I think we had number one.
Oh, maybe I think so. The other SC, the other, you know, so the cow.
Let's see, that shall not be named.
I mean, I didn't think I expected that. Mm-hmm. So, like, oh, these are the top people. Oh, we're gonna be good. Like, me and Demetria, Michelle and Makisha, I knew they were going. Shar Foster. I was happy, like, yeah, we're gonna have a bomb team next year. And because I knew them from national championships that we used to go to all through high school. So I was excited. And when we got there, we pushed each other.
Yeah.
To me, like, oh, let's get it.
Tony there, Williams, Alan Johnson, Melissa Morrison.
A lot of track legends were there.
Yeah. Like, and your recruiting class, was that the shift in South Carolina?
That was the shift. Oh, that was
So you guys started that culture. You know, I talked to LaShinda recently, and she was like, man, every practice I'm having to go all in, you know, by the time we got there. So you guys kind of got that started. Because it was like that when I got there, too.
Me and Demetria, I'm going to say we set that off.
They did.
For the 400. Man.
No, practice was real.
Monique Hennigan, Tony Williams,
yes.
Charmaine Howell. Dawn Ellerby, Bert, Soren, Brad, it was Michelle Fournier, Lisa Mistapika. Like, we had real heavy hitters, whether it was the throws, the sprints,
the jumps, Rodina
Bard, Chelsea. Well, Chelsea wasn't there yet, but, like, we had people that were already, when we were freshmen, we had so many mentors and motivators, and we got there, like, we had nothing but the best to look at. Like,
And then we're in the SEC, so...
We just had to get LSU on. And Auburn and like schools that you read about. Yeah, and,
I know.
Petergate, Gowdy. And I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys were part of a culture change. You know, that there were some pieces that were already there, the older classes were still there, but you guys coming in were like that catalyst to change the culture, become more competitive. And eventually, I mean, you guys won the school's first national championship, right?
Yes, that was,
so that was big. And so you guys were a part of a big culture change coming in there and making sure that when folks got to practice, they didn't slack off and just like, oh, I'm on scholarship, so I'll just play around. No, it's like, if you step on the line today, we're trying to be the best. So
some did slack off, but it was like getting where you fit in.
Yeah.
You got chewed up too.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know, I walked on to SC. You know, I was, like I said, a Jersey guy, and I looked up to y'all. I looked up to Tawana, too, because she was in Jersey just crushing it, being all the guys. And so, you know, I've seen SC for a long time, and I was like, I want to go down there. So I had not run fast enough to actually get a scholarship. I ran like 48, and I had gotten close but got injured. And so I ended up actually walking on to the team. And after my freshman year, I was put on full scholarship because I was, you know, I led off the 4x4 that won nationals, and all my times got like cut in half. And I attribute that to me being a walk-on and me being hungry. But every day at practice, when I had a choice, I could have trained with the guys who were on scholarship who were slacking, or I could have gone over there with Otis and John and run those 300s. And so what I did was I ran 300s with Otis Harris, Jonathan Fortenberry, and after getting, you know, demolished by them every day, eventually I got to the point where I earned my full scholarship. So,
were you there that year? Batman was there too, and Kenny.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was a
Okile. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was wild. It was a lot of everyone was there. A lot of superstars.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
So tell me, I want to hear about the 2002 National Championship. It's South Carolina's first championship, and you guys both played some instrumental roles in there. Let me hear about that, because I know that had to be a exciting, you know, crazy day.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was bittersweet because I was the captain at the time, and I was injured. So I was in the cast there. Oh. So I was just sitting on the sidelines watching, and I made sure I flew myself in, and I was there to watch them win. So I got there a day late or something, but I just wanted to be there. So I said, Coach Ron, I'm coming. He's like, for real? I said, I'm going to make sure I'm coming. And I did. And so I just wanted to be there for the team, to be a leader, to be a friend, to be a teammate, to show everybody that I'm there for them. And I was the loudest one screaming in the crowd, in the stands. So I just was there for moral support for the team. So when they won, I mean, I felt like I won too. I just wanted to be there.
That win? Come on.
I mean, I wasn't on the track, so I can't even say it.
I know, it's hard. But as a captain, you got to show your face and be there and show support. You're part of that win too.
Of course. Yeah.
And one thing you said that you wanted to be a leader. So what type of leadership qualities do you think you learned as being a captain and over the years in college?
Basically just to lead with confidence, be a listener, be a friend, be somebody that people can communicate with and talk to, basically. I think I didn't have to make sure everybody did this. I just led by example. And I think that's what people saw. So if you do what you're supposed to do and do it with passion, and people will see that. So that's the main thing that I don't have to be like, oh, when are you going to be here? When are you doing that? You know, I wasn't the type of person that's going to be like telling people what to do. I just led by example, and I showed them. Like every Wednesday, we had to do a long run or something. Every morning I would go on my runs. Mm-hmm. By junior and senior year, I made a dean's list. And, you know, sometimes I did mess up. I wasn't perfect. But, you know, I came back and bounced back. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. Like, maybe you might have a bad semester, but you got to come back and make that better. So people saw, once I did have a bad semester my freshman year, I did get hurt. I did, you know, but I did come back at the dean's list. And I did come back a national champion. And that's what I showed them. Like, you can fall and come back. So being a leader is being able to take wins and losses.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No, well said.
And how about you, Lisa?
For me, the 2002 championship was like, I feel like it was my breakout moment, because before then I was like always like Mickey's shadow, not shadow, but like I didn't really step up. I can say that. Like it was always like, oh, let's go, Mick. And I'm like, maybe I can get fourth, third. I didn't really have that much confidence. And I'd always have confidence in the relay though. I don't care if I'm running 4x1, 4x2, 4x4. I'm gonna like do it for my team. But when it came to myself, I kind of was like, eh, like I was like a C performer, to be honest. But then, you know, right like a week before nationals, whenever the deadline is, you have to declare events, I qualified in 100, the 200, and the 400. And it was like in the 100, I was like third, in the 200, I was fourth. So I'm like, okay, I'm ready now, senior. And then Coach Fry, I was like the last person making in the 400. And Coach Fry puts me in the 2 and the 4. I'm like, Coach Fry, like, I am not the 400. Like, it's my first time in the 100. Like, so he put me in the 400 and the 200 and the 4x1 and the 4x4. Oh, nope, didn't run the 4x4. But we'll talk about that. But I ran the 400. And each round, I PR'd. I ran 52.5, then 52.0. And then surprisingly, like it was like, oh, just go get a point. And I was like, a point, man, wait a minute now. And, you know, LaShinda, Demetria, like we ran our hearts out. And I PR'd him at 50.8. And it was like the easiest 400 I've ever ran. And I'm like, I'm running like, am I leading right now? And coming home, she was from Rice. Oh man, I forgot Beckford? Her name. Allison Beckford. Mm-hmm. Allison Beckford won with like 50.82 and I ran 50.87. And that was
like, close. What? That one burns your chest.
I didn't even know. Like, I didn't even know I was even.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm not a 400 runner. I just ran 50 point whatever. Like,
it really was that.
But it happened like that. Seriously. Like, it was like, what?
I was like, you're running the 400? You could do it.
But I remember before that, I really was like, you know what? I'm just going for it. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just going to go. And I did it. And that gave me, like, just confidence, even to show, like, even when you think you can't, if you just do it, you might do it. And then I became the NCAA runner-up in the 400, and I got fourth in the 200. The 200 was like 30 minutes after the 400. Yeah, and I still ran pretty well. We won the 4x1. I didn't run the 4x4, but I know we, like, that record will probably still be up there. But I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I was actually, that's the first time I was ever ready to be like, okay, I'm ready to run the 4x4. And I was like, wait, I'm not running? Like, what? And I just, it was a shock, but they still won. And
they broke the record.
Yeah, they broke the record. Mm-hmm. And congrats to Sita, Tiffany, Lashinda, and Demetria. And it was a great experience.
And
it
just, to be the first ever national champion.
Yeah.
That's big.
That's
trying to get us to build a float for y'all. The guys, we were like, come on, man.
Wouldn't that have been dope if they would have built the flow for us? They would have built
the flow. Y'all got some special treatment, I'm going to just say.
Well, we should get special treatment.
We should have came back with shades on.
Yes, we are the day. Why would we not? If they were the football team, they would have private jets. The baseball team? Oh, yeah. The baseball team won, too. I think it was after. No,
they won the football four. Yeah. But that's why it was crazy, because I was on it the next year as a walk-on. Mm-hmm. So it was like, these guys are the national champions, and we were SECs, and Fry was looking around like, you're leading off. And I had this baggy bodysuit because I was a walk-on.
Extra large.
Ran out of my body, though. I definitely ran out of my body that day. I was like, man, I'm terrified.
Yes.
Yeah, it was so those experiences happen when you show up to the big meeting. You're like, look, I don't care what's happened to this point, but I'm coming out here to game today.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's pretty. I have a funny story. One of you, I feel like it was you, Mickey. Uh-oh. I want to say it was you. We were doing one lappers one day in the bubble. And for you, all you listening at home, the bubble at the time was this little, you know, it was this rinky dink, 100.
Square.
It was like a square track. So really hard to get around. The workouts in there really tough. And we used to do this thing called one lapper. We just run as hard as you could for one lap, essentially, right? And coach would give us like 90 seconds rest. So I don't know who it was. I think it was you.
It was probably Mickey.
Yeah, I think it was.
Like, what's going on?
It was 90 seconds rest, and one of you did like two of them, and it took a break. Like, you know, went, did something. I don't know.
That was me.
Change of spikes, go take a breather.
Yeah, I was good for that.
And I, you know, I was doing my 90 seconds rest, so I get to like number five, and here you come walking up, line up next to me.
Oh, that was me then.
That was you?
Oh, okay. If I took the break?
Yeah, that was me. Came back, but then line up next to me though on my last one.
So how'd I do?
I was like, come on, man. Well, how'd you do? So we got out, and I was running as hard as I could. I got out as hard as I could with everything I had left, because I was like, yo, you are not about to embarrass me out here today. Okay, everyone was there doing one lap. Everyone was looking. So I got out as hard as I could. And then somebody was like, ooh.
That was
like,
probably me. You don't remember that? No, but she said the break. I
walked down in this one lapper. So I was in game mode. I treated like a track meet, man. I put my elbows up and I start moving to the side. And you like ran off the track into a high jump mat.
Oh, I was like, that was me.
Everybody, you know, some people were mad at me, but I was like, hey,
you took me out, Adrian.
Wow, Adrian. It was that serious?
Listen, was that serious? Man, they started.
You put the national champ into a high jump bed.
Look,
just saying.
Don't embarrass me. This was practice. Practice was war back in the day.
What? Mind you, Ashley, when you went around the curve, it's really like running a baseball. Like, you have to set yourself up to go around the curve. Like, it it was a square. Yeah, so imagine, you know, someone's coming in and then you have to like run off or you'll wipe out. I mean, literally wipe out.
Just like every other guy that I was racing against at practice trying to prove myself, man. You was trying to, they were making those noises. And the team we had then, you know, I went to a meet once and came back overseas. I went, ran for the BISO and I ran slowly. This was when I was still a freshman. And those guys made fun of me for like, you know, months. You know, you're not living that down. 49. So I'm sorry. I was like, look, man, I'm going to walk on. I'm trying to, you know, embarrass me out here.
Yeah. I think but, I do remember that, Adrian. Yeah. That was.
Was that you? I'm sorry.
Typical. It's all right.
Like, you know, you were fast. So like you were a little more rested. That wasn't fair.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah, it took me out. But, you know, I didn't get hurt. It's cool. You had to.
No, you didn't get hurt. You just kind of like, you know, into the mat. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's a definition of equality.
I know. What
you've been asking for.
Exactly.
But still, you did a little dirty.
A little dirty.
A little dirty.
They started making a noise. That ooh.
Yeah. Like, oh, so that was hurting your pride.
Oh, no. And I was coming.
I don't know if you guys have ever heard that. I assume everyone has heard
that. Yeah. I don't know what that is. Definitely know what the
word. I mean, heard it when it's happening to you, like the person's behind
That's
you.
Happened once in my life. Yeah, it happens. Allison walked me down at Mount St. Relay on the 401. That's the only time I got walked down like that.
Is that like the first time Allison walking you down?
I was like, dang, there's nothing you can do.
I know.
It's Allison Felix. Some people you just like, okay.
Yeah, all right.
I'm pretty sure you still went 50 point.
No, this was the 4x1.
Oh, 4x1.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All right.
Yeah,
you know, had a little dust in my mouth, little flakes. Yeah,
but you know, and that's another thing about track that I try to show people, because there's no quick victories. Like, you know, they look at someone like Bolt, who, you know, at his highest, just the best ever. And I was like, yeah, a couple years before that, he was kind of getting smoked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's
Tyson Gay and Xavier were giving it to him
all day long. And so this game, you know, track and field, sport, anything that you're really trying to pursue some success and be good in, you know, it's a work, but it's constant, because, you know, it's not like it's an overnight thing, you know.
And that's what people think, that is overnight.
They think, oh, you just popped up. They're not seeing the 10 years, you know, you put in the game.
Yes. No. Or they don't know the work that goes into it from those couple of seconds or minute. Like, they think it's just
you're just fast.
Yeah. Like, no, they think track is just running. Just that's it. Like, no, it's your whole lifestyle. It's everything. Mm-hmm. If you're a Olympic sports person, like, that's your everything, or whatever you do. It's your passion. That's not just like one little, 2 hours a day. Like, no, because you're thinking about your U.S. championships. You're thinking about your next meet in the next couple of months. You're thinking everything is planned out. Everything has a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that day to day. It's always a plan. Like, oh, I can't do this today because next month I got to do that. And then this is championships. And then I got to go here. People don't understand that you put in at least 6 to 8 hours a day on your craft.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it.
When you and both of you are world champions, you know, just at the highest levels, you know, how was that transition, you know, leaving the college system and becoming a pro and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, doing things on your own and getting the contracts and all of that stuff? What was that transition like? Because, you know, I try to ask everyone that question just to get their perspective on it. I think in general, it sounds like it's a tough thing, but I just want to hear from your perspectives.
Okay. Looked at each other like,
For me, it was a big decision because, you know, I was with Coach Fry for 6 years and, I went to college there. That's all I knew. And, you know, then I had my high school coach, Raymond Spivey. Like, I got along with them well, and I was used to that like team type of thing. And, this was the first time, I got my first gold world championship medal in 2003 in Paris, and I'm like fresh out of college. I was 21, and on the 4x4. So after that, I was like, you know, I want to go back down to the sprints. So I had to make that decision. I want to run the 1 and the 2, and I changed coaches, and I was like, wherever I'm gonna go, remember I said I was like a C performer by myself. I was like, wherever I'm going to go, I don't know how it's going to be. I'm going to give 95 to 100% every day. Like, you know, and really, really focus. And you know what? It was very hard, but you know what? When I really put in the work, when I mentally, physically, I was very organized. I got my rest, like things that I just, before I just kind of like ran, but this time I was like, you know what? I want to be a US champion. I want to make the world team. And you know, I did it. I did it. And it was kind of like surreal. Like, wait, this is really happening. Like, you know, this is really happening. And it was a different experience. It was kind of unbelievable a little bit for me. Not unbelievable, but like, I was really proud to see like, okay, once you really do, or for me, when I really set my mind to something, when I'm organized, when I'm getting my proper rest, when I'm eating pretty decent and my weight is good, I'm lifting and I'm sprinting as well, I became the US champion in 100 meters. I PR'd the 200. I never really ran the 4 again, but I know, oh man, if I ran the 4 then, I know I would have ran 49. I just know it because it was crazy. But I just kept that going, and I've had a lot of glitches, but you know, I'll never forget that point in time, that transition. And I'll never forget the things that got me there. So.
No, I love that story because it just sounds like you made a decision. And I often talk to people about this, you know, if you want to accomplish something like that, be US champion, you have to make a real decision and be honest about that decision. I'm going to be US champ. And then every day, look at the decisions that you're making and see if they line up with that big decision. So the next day, are you doing all the things that it takes to achieve that goal that you declared the other day? You know, you want to be US champ. So it sounds like you were like, hey, look, I'm putting 100% into this. This is what I'm going to do. My diet, my sleep, I'm committing everything to this. And you were successful. You achieved your goal. And that's what it takes. It's real. And it was hard, I'm sure.
It was hard, but you know, it was so rewarding because when you do things right, it's actually kind of easier, you know, like it sounds, but like when you do things right, and for me now, like sleep is hard. I know that sounds easy, but I'm like, it's hard for me to go to sleep, but I really had a strong intention on what I wanted to do. And then I was like, you know what, if I don't make it, then I called it my make it or break it year. I said, if I don't make it, or if I don't get another contract, cause I just got released from my contract. And I'm like, man, I just won a world championship in the 4x4. So it was kind of devastating. Like, man, they didn't renew my contract. So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna do things with good intention, be prepared, get everything, all the check boxes. And if it doesn't work, then hey, I can look back and say, look, I gave it an A effort, and that's all I had. And I can walk away like, okay. And it was my make it or break it year. And I did it. And I was like, wow, this really happened. From not making money to now making money. Like I'm overseas. I'm in the Diamond Leagues, the Golden Leagues. And I'm like top 5 in the world for a couple of years. Number 1 in the world, number 2 in the world. And it was like, that's an indicator of life. Like what you put in is what you put out. And not all the time you're going to win. I didn't win every race, but you know what? I know every time I lined up, that person next to me was like, oh, dang, Lisa's in the race. I gotta go.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, that's what I wanted, to be a strong competitor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So.
Nah, that's great.
And how about you, Mickey?
Well, for me, mine was different because I had my second foot surgery. And I never come my senior year in college. I was battling injuries. I had 2 foot surgeries, and 1 in 03 and 1 in 05. So I never really got to make that transition like I wanted to. So I was always getting rehab and coming back. Mm-hmm. So, and when I saw my sister, I was like, oh, Lisa's a new person now. Like she was really focused. And
oh, wait, can I say something? Mm-hmm. That's what made me. Like when Mickey got hurt, because Mickey never really got hurt in college, and she was just like, go, 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 go. So when she got hurt, I was like, man, she's really hurt. And like, I got to step up now. I got to have to really apply myself. And that was my biggest motivation, because that's what she always did. And I didn't really kind of care. But when she got hurt, I was like, oh man, she's out of here. She's out. Like, she, I had to carry her down the stairs and take her to rehab. Like, that was kind of shocking too. So I made that decision, like, you know what? Let me stop playing around. And
a lot of things we were just learning. So we didn't, like, our parents were in New Jersey, mm-hmm. and we didn't really have that support. No, not saying for my parents, but like most people have like their teams and stuff. They did. I don't feel like I was doing a lot of stuff on my own. Mm-hmm. And so,
like, we never trained together. Ever. Everyone always thinks that, but we didn't.
Mm-mm. So
professionally.
Yeah. So that was, to me, one of the hardest things, is just having the right people in your corner to show you what to do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause signing a contract is not hard. I mean, it's not easy. Going with the right team and the people is not easy. And you really need that, honestly, to be a great athlete, unless you can do it yourself, but not too many people. I mean, you can, but it's so much easier when you have the right team to make that transition. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're injured. Because a lot of times I was by myself. I couldn't even make it to rehab half the time because it was far away. So I mostly rehab myself. I was like once a week rehab. Like, mm-hmm. what is this going to do? Do like
and I little was at practice,
toe so, curls. Yeah. I'm like, no. So I would just be home doing my own stuff and getting my foot together. And that next year when I came back in 06. And I got fourth at U.S. Championships. And the semifinals of U.S. Championships in 100, me and Marion Jones were neck and neck. And that was kind of cool to me. Like, oh, snap, I'm right next to Marion Jones. But, you know, I was cool. And that's when I got my my contract with Nike. Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, agents and groups, to me, that's been really hard to manage. Like, you really mm-hmm. need a good agent. And you really need a good group.
A good coach. Supportive coach.
So yeah, someone who's going to really, like, make sure you get it. Because if you have a coach that you're not getting along with, that's worse. I'd rather be alone by myself and train myself than wanting and expecting that attention and support you need from a coach. Because that's a distraction when it should be something that's supposed to help you. So when you're like, dang, he ain't come to my, or they didn't come to my track meet, or hello, coach, yeah. are you there? Or am I your athlete?
Yeah.
That's the hard part. And that's part people don't realize. Like, it's, you need that. You need teammates. You need, or you don't need, you just have to have people that if there's one person you can be there, that can be there for you, that's what you need when you're making that transition.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the main thing.
And that wasn't only a transition in your career, but that was throughout this conversation. You guys said that you guys were always together. You planned to go to college, and this was the first time that you guys actually separated. So that was another transition because you were away from your sister for the first time. What was that like?
Well, no, we lived together, but we didn't train together. Like, our coaches, nobody would train us together. Like,
really?
We never train together. And when we do train together, it's different. Mm-hmm. Like, with different coaches, like, I don't get it.
I don't really think twins are gonna do, but
like, you're gonna take over the group. Like, what do you mean?
I don't think you're too like, much.
How? Together. I don't know. We just never trained together. But until now, and we're good. Like, yeah. And mm-hmm. when we didn't have we trained together in later years in yeah. our careers, but through our whole 20s, like, I moved to LA in 2009 and she lived in North Carolina.
In Atlanta.
So for 6 or 7 years, we weren't around each other. And then mm-hmm. she moved out here in 2016. And ever since then, we've been training together. But mm-hmm. that was the first time ever, other than college.
But even in college, she ran the 4 mm-hmm. and I ran the 1 and 2. Yeah, and then when I ran the 4, she was injured.
And now we both are sprinters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You brought up an interesting point earlier, you know, when we're talking about transition to pro career, and you were talking about just the contracts and how hard. I feel like for a lot of folks who want to transition into that, you know, pro track realm, that there isn't enough education on the whole process, getting an agent, negotiating a contract, you know, mm-hmm. having someone to look at the contract and make sure there are things in it that actually benefit you and protect you as an athlete, other than just exploiting you and your talent. And mm-hmm. it seems like there's a revolving, you know, this revolving door system where it's just like, you know, they know that they're going to get some new seniors coming out of college every year. Somebody who's running 9.9, somebody who's running 11 flat. And so they don't have to take care of you. That's the sense that I get. And, you know, I think it just needs to be better. You guys were in the system and experienced it. Mm-hmm. You know, do you feel like there's enough support for athletes? I mean, you guys are a world champion. You get to the highest level. I mean, people, when they're kids, dream about being world champions, and you guys became world champions. Is there enough support? Is there enough support from whether it's, you know, the system or, you know, the track and field as a whole? Is there, you know, for people who have achieved something, to me, that's amazing. Especially being someone who ran track, getting a gold medal at the world championship. Listen, I was fast and I'm racing people who are running by me. You know, these are the top of the top. And that's where you ended up, you know, gold medal. So, you know, I just want to hear your thoughts on that, the support that you receive, you know, in general.
Support from, you say, coaches or like USA Track and Field, you're governing about, like,
I'm not trying to call anyone out specifically, but the system that we currently have, if world champions are finding issues, because, you know, I know how it is. You know, you run 11 flat this year, bam, you're good. You have your Nike contract. Next year, you pull your hamstring.
Yeah. Not right now.
You have to run 10. It's crazy.
It depends sometimes. Like, I've been at a U.S. championship where everyone broke 11 seconds and some people didn't have contracts that year. Like, why? Or I've done so many people that I know. Yeah, I do think we need support at track and field. Like, to me, I think they're still trying to figure out, is track and field a professional sport? Like, why is that even a question? Or like, yes, a lot of people don't know that, like, you can really be, it's a real sport. And like, no, it's serious. And like, it's a living, a lifestyle, and that, you know, we are here. And I think we're still every day trying to show that. And we definitely need more support from sponsors, from more visibility,
television,
more marketing. You know, like, there's so many great athletes that people don't know about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe. So sometimes it's hard for me to say, oh, yeah, be a track runner, you know, like, because then sometimes, like, is track, is it real? You know, like, I think every track athlete should, or a certain amount of people, they should be okay to live and compete and be an athlete. Like, why do you have to be an Olympic gold medalist to pay your bills? Why? Why can't you be an athlete, a competitor, a great competitor in the field, just like other sports that get paid super millions of dollars? Why? Not saying you have to be a millionaire, but why can't you be a competitor in your sport and live, you know, like, live well and be a professional athlete? I don't think the majority of our sport is that. You know, I think if you make it to U.S. championships, if you're in that final, you should be okay. Or, you know, if you top 15 something, like, why do you have to be the Olympic gold medalist to take care of yourself or to be well off? You know,
I think everybody with track, everybody's situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to generalize. It's hard to kind of generalize it because every athlete on that line has a totally different contract. Some might have the same major, some might have the same coach, some might, when you say support. So it's kind of hard to generalize it all. Or I do think track and field needs a little more visibility because there was a time when you saw Maurice Greene and John Drummond.
Yeah, like the early 2000s and the 80s, the early 90s, 2000s. That was it.
You saw it. But then it kind of, you know, dwindled down. I don't know why, but it did. So I just hope it can come back around like that, where, you know, we can see who's who and everybody is racing good and performing well, and, you know, it can come back after that. And hopefully it will. I think it's kind of come back around.
So, yes, I think track needs some more support, or the athletes did.
Yes. It's a lot of individualization with that, too.
Okay. It's an individual sport to some aspect. And I agree with you guys. It's definitely hard to get that visibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you could be a track athlete, an Olympian, et cetera, but they'll ask if you're Usain Bolt. Because Usain Bolt, to be a Usain Bolt, that's, like, out of here. And that's who they recognize. Not everyone is a Usain Bolt. There's so many others out there. So that visibility, I definitely agree with. for sure.
Yes, and thank you for Usain Bolt for bringing track back like that, where there is a person, you know, you can compare it to. So they say, oh, do you know Usain? I'm like, yeah, I know Usain. And there is somebody that they even know, because for a minute there wasn't really even that for a second.
Mm-hmm. So, it was high competition, but it took someone like Usain Bolt to bring track back. So just imagine what we have to wait to get again, because that's a special being.
Yes.
And we have to have that type of person to be noticed. And I think that's not the greatest thing right now.
Flashiness. Yeah.
You know, some swag.
We need more people to be on. We need more races on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And more coverage.
Even when you mentioned Maurice, you know, the fire hydrant thing with the spikes, mm-hmm. like some swag, something that has people talking, you know, Bolt get up there and say, I'm the best athlete in history, bask in my glory. You know, mm-hmm. you need, like some of that cockiness, some of that energy to kind of bring people and be like, oh man, I want to watch. Because other than that, I guess, you know, other than fans who want to watch a four hurdle race, people aren't, mm-hmm. you know, they're not really talking track like that.
And we need more rivalries, I think.
That helps too.
Like I think this weekend coming up, this weekend coming up on the American Track League is going to be a good meet. There's a lot of head-to-heads coming up this weekend, so that's going to be great.
And special shout out to the American Track League and Paul Doyle, because to actually have ESPN spots and then supporting our different athletes, as far like Will Clay, he has his own commercial on there, like that's a big deal. Yeah. Will Clay, Queen Harrison, Queen Clay, like to see, you know, people from our sport actually on ESPN with their commercial. We need stuff like that. And it was cool to watch the way they covered it. Mm-hmm. So more meets in the American Track League, more coverage, more mm-hmm. stories, more rivalries, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
More cross-marketing, allowing people to whatever creative outlet that you have. I feel like track should be that platform to springboard it.
To see that a lot of people do. That's the thing about being a track and field athlete, like, cause we're entrepreneurs, you know, like really who we are. It's not like you leave track and then you're left with all this money. Like, hey, I'm a multimillionaire. Like most people, most athletes or whatever. No, you have to find a whole another way. And a lot of people have found different outlets and platforms and different ways of branding themselves that makes them stand out. So to me, all track and field athletes are multi-talented and have to do a whole lot, not just track and field.
Mm-hmm. And what were you guys' outlets? What are you guys doing outside of track?
Yes, well, I love to cook. So I'm working on my own little show.
Wait, hold on. Don't, because I want to comment on that point you just made before you go into this, because I want to hear about this piece too, your cooking.
Yes, but yes.
The point you just made about athletes having just all these other things going on with them, I agree with 1,000,000%. You know, I hate that, we had a conversation the other day where you were mentioning how, you know, a lot of times people say things like, oh, you know, track athletes, well, you're just track athletes, or how do you know or do certain things, you know, track athletes. Like they're just downplayed for some reason. And I'm like, some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life, the most brilliant, talented, you know, whether it's, you know, playing music or writing or just all the other things that they do outside of track, in addition to being championship caliber track and field athletes, just the talents that they have and the ability they have, to hear anyone downplay someone like, you're just a track athlete, after I know how much time that you have to put in to get to a certain level in this sport. It's outrageous.
And that's what we have to deal with daily on a business level, on a day to day. Like, oh, you just, or I might, if I say, hey, I run track, and then I say something else, like, man, hold on, I didn't know you could do that. I thought you know how to run track. Like, I do run track, but there's a lot of other things I can do. Or sometimes I might be in a business meeting and I'll come up with something and come up with a campaign. And like, we love the campaign. This was great. What'd you think about that? I never even heard of that. Like, we pay all this money to these great advertisers and you came up with slogan. Like, yeah, but you're just a track athlete. I mean, I don't even understand how you know that. Like, I am a track athlete, but you know, I do other things, but it goes like,
I think it happens with a lot of people.
Athletes.
Yeah. And that's the problem. Yeah. Because
you get general.
Yeah.
That's why.
Football player. I'm like, listen, yes. I mean, you know, I'm not Cornell.
I mean, shut up and dribble with LeBron. Like,
yeah, crazy.
any views, or you're not smart, or you're not this, and you know, that just kind of happens because your talent, your what you do. I mean, it's supposed to define you.
It's supposed to define you.
But and then it does. Like, what's wrong with being?
I think people see what you do, and they're like, "I can't do that." But I'm smarter than them because I, you know, and you're like, well, not really though. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'm at Cornell, so I'm seeing, you know, I'm coaching track athletes who are engineers, and I'm like, so
yes,
women's team. I'm like, goodness gracious, you know, you have Marshall Scholars, Rhodes Scholars, 4.0 GPA. So that to me is, I'm just like, people think that because you're a track athlete or an athlete in general that shouldn't be multifaceted. It's, be able to
no, it can only be that. And then they know the window of being an athlete closes, so they say, "Oh, now what you gonna do?" Or like, "You're only an athlete," but it's like,
be good at something else. Be good at something else. A person who's driven to the point where they're getting a gold medal at a world championship can be driven to do something else.
Exactly.
That's crazy. Okay, so what Ashley was asking you about cooking, because you have a cooking channel, right?
Well, it's show. It's coming.
Oh, it's show.
It's in the works.
Mm-hmm. In the works.
Coming soon. Yes.
Okay. It's good. Okay, it's, I want to hear about it.
So I've always, not always, but I started cooking actually my senior year in college because, well, my grandmother could always cook really well. My mom, a lot of people, I come from a lot of great cooks, my dad. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I don't really cook. Like, how do they make it taste so good? So that's when I was like, you know what? When I got my own apartment, I got it. I'm going to start cooking. And that's when I started. And then my boyfriend at the time, I will never forget this. I was making some food, some meal, some dinner. I was like, okay, you want some? He's like, no, I'm going to McDonald's. Like,
whoa, McDonald's though?
He said McDonald's.
Oh, out of everywhere else, he chose McDonald's over your home cooking.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. Then he comes back, whatever, and then I'm eating the food, like, this is good. He's like, he's like, let me try it. He's like, man, this is really good. I know it's good. But you trying to play my food? Why would you not eat it? All right, cool. So from that point on, I'm getting all the recipes and getting all this stuff, and I started cooking from there. And then when I got to North Carolina, I had a hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I didn't know what that was, whatever, but I just remember myself feeling a certain way, and I'm like, something's not right. And you're like, oh, you have hyperthyroidism. I'm like, okay. Then they said I had to eat a certain way, and I did. And from that point on is when I was like, I love cooking. I love cooking healthy food. Mm-hmm. And that part changed my life. So I always love cooking healthy, good food. Because a lot of people are like, Nick, you always eating this and that. They're like, but it's good, though. I'm like, yes. Like, you don't have to eat junk food to eat good food.
You have to work on that.
Oh, man. See, me and Lisa together, like, please stop buying this bread, these snacks.
All right.
Cause I'm gonna eat them, so that's what it was. I like to eat. I love to eat. I'm a foodie, so when I have food around me, I eat it. But in my house, I don't really buy a lot of junk food because I'm gonna eat it. Then me and Lisa live together again. Then I'm like, Lisa, what are these cakes and these cookies in here for? All right,
I'm working on it, guys.
What is that? So now, fast forward, I started 2014. I started using the hashtag Nick Made It. Okay. And I would always hashtag my food. And they're like, Nick, oh, my homegirl one time, she would never eat my food. I'm like, you want some food? And she's like, no, I'm not. How do you know how to cook? I would cook all the time. She was like, no, I don't want that. Like, it's good. How do you know how to cook? You don't know how to cook. Like, okay. She finally ate the salmon and my salad from a homemade salad dressing. She was like, Mickey, you missed your calling. I said, no.
You missed your calling.
She was like, this is good, this salad dressing. I said, I know it's good. She's like, she was saying something else, but like, she was like, good. I'm like, I know. I've been telling you that for at least a year. She was like, what? I'm like, no, you just didn't want to believe that I can cook because you're projecting because you can't cook. now look. And so I've been, she ate the food and she's like, this is amazing. So now I've got a company hit me up, said they wanted me to start my own show.
Uh-oh.
I have creative control and it's coming out soon.
And I'm going to be the sous chef.
Yes. And she's going to be my helper.
The prepper.
You know?
Lisa, you cook too?
I cook.
I don't know. You sure?
I'm there.
I'm the prepper. Like, I'm the
prepper. Set everything up. So we cook meat. Are you going to wash the chicken?
I don't really.
So y'all got to get some good recipes.
But you're the sous chef. So
y'all got to get some good recipes. I'm from the Caribbean. We're from the Caribbean.
Oh, shit.
What's some oxtail?
Do you put, okay, so what's the Coca-Cola chicken or Coca-Cola or Pepsi chicken?
Ashley probably knows too then.
I don't know.
I don't know. No.
I don't know Pepsi chicken?
No. I've heard that of
that. Sounds
Pepsi
American
chicken.
To me.
Stew chicken? Pepsi?
Oh, brown stew chicken.
Brown stew chicken?
Yeah. You put Pepsi in it?
Pepsi?
You call that Pepsi?
Like the soda. Like,
wow. I think that's like.
Nah, man.
Only
y'all tripping.
You. That was only you.
We're not putting Pepsi in.
I can't.
Who are listening, please disregard that.
I got it from an island person.
I have nothing.
She's not
saying that from an island
Pepsi
person. I don't know what
chicken.
Island that person is from. I cannot
from
co-sign
Jamaica.
That.
I'm not part of that.
From where?
From Jamaica. Kenya Sinclair. Kenya.
Nah, man. You don't have the Jamaican stuff on my YouTube.
Kenya. We were in...
And you just called out Kenya Sinclair because she's going to be denounced from Jamaica. Man, I don't know who puts Pepsi in stew chicken.
I never heard
Sorry.
Of that.
It was the best stew chicken ever. That's all I want to call her now. Like, we were in Australia.
She's going to watch this video and hopefully comment. And-
yeah, she'd be like, it was good.
Okay. Comment. I want to taste this Pepsi chicken if it's good.
And this was one of the things. We're in Australia, one of the best meats ever. We're over there for like 2.5 weeks. This is the one thing about track and field.
People don't know
where you are. They're like, oh, you ain't. No, I've been to 10 countries already, like in the past 2 months, actually. Yeah. They're thinking not doing nothing and not racing. Like, no, I don't. You just didn't see me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been getting it in. So yep. We were in Australia. We had the Sly condo at the Medina Hotel right next to the Olympic Stadium where Rihanna was performing that weekend. And
I wish I was there.
It was the best trip of one of the best trips of my life. Mm. We had the condo, me, Justin Gaiman, Monica Carlos, and Kenan Sinclair. And me, Monica, and Kenya were roommates. And Justin, I think, had his own situations on his other floor. But it was amazing. So Kenya's, we had our own, it was the best. So Kenya was cooking some chicken, stewed chicken. And she had, I think it was Pepsi. She was putting Coke in it or like soda. And it was good. Wait till Kenya watched this. And then we're going to have a whole another run it back and be like, look, this is what the Pepsi or Coke chicken is.
Yeah, I need to hear it from her mouth first before I leave.
I'm from St. Croix. Don't let people back home. Please don't associate me with this recipe. Please don't fry me.
No,
she said Jamaica, so I think we okay.
I know.
That's
just
from
having
Jamaican
someone on
stuff.
The show, on this podcast, saying something about Pepsi and chicken.
Okay, I'm going to run this back.
That'll be your recipe on the show. Yeah, on the Mick Made It.
Okay. Now I want to see
this
it,
This is
though.
The one clip that we need that says that has anyone else... Use yes. Pepsi in stew chicken. And if
comment
the poll
below,
says
please.
No.
Pepsi or Coke in the stew
chicken. Pepsi or Coke and chicken. If anyone puts their Pepsi or Coke and chicken, please comment chicken. And let us know how it is.
It was amazing.
I'll take your word for it.
Yes. So
Lisa,
now it's one of my transitions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was reading that you started your own jewelry line.
Yes, I have a jewelry line called the Honey Collection.
Your bracelets, the Honeybee Collection, was actually one of the first healing bracelets that I had because I was in it and I was around Rio time. And I saw you were posted on Tiffany Williams, the hurdler.
Yes.
Yeah, she posted your thing and then I bought one of your bracelets.
Oh my God.
This is one of the first ones I had. I now have these. This is like from Inspire.
Oh man,
definitely go
so
and look into getting some more because I
that's
do want the healing properties and everything.
I got to send you another one. I got you. I'm going to send you another one. Thank you for your support.
You and Adrian.
You guys
Thank
will get
you.
A Honey Collection bracelet.
Oh, awesome. That sounds good.
Thank you, guys. I needed
one.
Yes. I'm going to send you a new one. I actually started 10 years ago.
Wow.
I was living in Atlanta, and I was doing a lot of research on healing stones because actually I got into a car accident. This was kind of a little detour in my career. Uh-huh. And I was actually leaving a track meet and I was in Canada and I went, you know how they have like those healing stores and stuff, mm-hmm. like with all like the books and the stones and all that. And this lady at the store and she gave me a carnelian stone for whatever reason. I don't know, like that was the aura I had when I came in and I'll just never forget it. And I started like researching stones and their healing properties. Mm-hmm. So I started at the time, I made a bracelet for my boyfriend at the time. And then I just started wearing stones myself and I just had them on my wrist. So everywhere I went out, you know,
people were like, where'd you get your bracelets from? Yep. And I was like, oh, I made them. They were like, well, can I buy them off your arm? And that's how it started. It started like that. And then I was just like selling and making bracelets from back then. And I still do it. My jewelry line on Instagram is Honey Collection Jewelry. Everything I make, and each stone has their own healing property, power, strength, mm-hmm. all different type of things depending on the stone. And it's still going pretty good. I didn't think it would go as far as it did, but it's still going well.
That's pretty cool.
Also on the cooking show, I make juices as well.
Okay.
Ooh, I love the juices. I love
I'll be having my juice recipes on there. I have 3 good ones. I'm not gonna say them yet. So you guys have to tune in.
What, 3 good names? What do you mean?
3 good names on the juices. I mean 3 good juices.
Oh.
So this is the banter that we can expect to see on your cooking show.
Yes. It's gonna be good. And actual cooking too, which would be great.
Actual cooking, actual
a little bit of cooking, banter, you know.
Yeah, music. We're gonna have a
R&B.
Oh, that's gonna be a party.
90 kids. Oh, yeah. You already know.
That sounds right.
Please just leave the stew chicken with Pepsi out.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
I'm gonna put that in there so you can know that.
Matter of fact, we gotta bring Ashley and Adrian on the show so they can taste it.
That's down. We're having guests. I'm a foodie too. I like food.
I gotta bring Keenan to
fly you out.
The situation.
I'm all about it. I'm all about it. So you two are always active, always busy, you know, considered sport ambassadors. I know you guys have been on different magazines and Sports Illustrated and all kind of fun stuff. So what is it, you know, I know you're doing you have the cooking channel that you're starting. And I know that you're dealing with, and I know, Lisa, you have your jewelry company. Are there any things within track that you guys are still working on, any projects or anything that you can tell us?
Well, we're both coaches. Well, we coach. So perfect. We have a lot of clients. We got a lot of youth kids that we work with. So we're all about being fast and fearless, you know, mm-hmm. and we have Fearless Mind is our motivational speaking company that I started in 2015. And we've been to over 200 schools. And that's what we've been doing via Zoom. And when we used to be outside, we used to be in public and go tear all the schools up. Mm-hmm. But
I know y'all always active.
Yeah, so, you know, we just keep moving and having different platforms and things that we can do. So Fearless Minds is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we're always connected to track and field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I coach at different junior – I coach at PCC College and Pasadena City College
mm-hmm.
and Calabasas High School. We work with a lot of different high schools around here and individuals, kids. So we're always looking to see the next who's fastest or, you know, just
in all sports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or just trying to keep people healthy and active. That's one thing we do. We do a lot of workout classes, mm-hmm. Fitness, HIIT workouts. Yeah. So we do it all.
No, that's pretty cool. I know, you know, I was talking to Michael Cherry recently and he was talking about how, you know, he saw LaShawn in his local area and he looked up mm-hmm. to LaShawn and that's kind of what got him running track and then track got mm-hmm. him to college and, you know, now he's competing against LaShawn. And so, you know, how active, you know, both of you, your stories, you know, coming up, you know, from Montclair and then the whole South Carolina, you know, triumph and then going from there, becoming world champions. You know, you guys have been involved with the sport for a long time and have a lot of history and, you know, have been in millions of articles and are well known. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, little girls out there who see you and like, oh, I want to be like, you know, Mickey, I want to be like Lisa. And, you know, I want to be an Olympian. And, you know, it's easy to kind of forget that impact because maybe you don't see it directly, but there are people who are looking at your stories and who are being motivated and who are, you know, going to be able to go to college or, you know, whatever based off of, you know, track or whatever they pursue. And a lot of that motivation is coming from what they see from you too. So, you know, if no one's told you, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Folks are definitely, you know, watching. And, you know, you two are two of the most influential, two of the most, you know, two of the best track athletes, the most amazing track athletes that I've ever met. And I'm happy to know you two. You know, it's just, and so hopefully I can get you guys back on here and we could talk some more.
Of course. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you, Ashley. This has been great.
Thank you guys for being my first guest.
Yeah.
You were amazing.
Yes, Ash.
I know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No, this was great. It was a great chat. See, it's not too bad. It's not all stuffy.
No, this was good.
That's why I say it's over. I thought we had more questions.
Dad. I mean, we could, you know, it's not, I'm not putting a hard stop on it. I gave you an opportunity to dip out if you needed to. But no, there's always more that we can chat about because, you know, how often am I going to get the Barber Twins up here?
You can always call us up and we can.
Yeah.
Because we're already coming back from round two.
No, listen.
Oh, we got to get the chicken and then we're going to see. So we got to call back.
Call them up.
We have to do the poll to see if this chicken and Pepsi is a thing.
That's not.
And then once the show launches,
I don't know. So
I'm just saying, here's my thing. If y'all going to have black people watching this show, be careful, man, because, you know.
It sounds crazy. That's
highly critical.
I don't know. I saw her pouring Coke. I think it was Coke. I don't know. It was Pepsi or Coke. And I'm like, where's that going? And she was like,
I like how Lisa just backed away from the, the conversation. She was just like, I don't know. I wasn't there.
We'll see.
All right.
I've never seen it before.
I trust your cooking, but don't know about that.
I feel like
all my Jamaican friends, y'all got to come back and say like, duh, we know what soda chicken is.
I know. And I'm going to feel bad. They're going to fry me. But that's okay. I'd rather be on the side of not knowing about any Pepsi and chicken than on that side.
So let me tell y'all too. If I'm the sous chef and I prepare, I'm not pouring in the soda.
You
should not take responsibility for anything that's produced.
I take accountability for everything and responsibility for my Coke chicken. Okay. Or my Coke
okay.
Chicken.
Don't hurt all nobody. Right. Please.
And no. That's why when I say, like, I think I'm the oldest person on the track and field, oldest sprinter in the world right now. Okay. So I would never think right now, or if you asked me when I made the Olympic team 20 years ago, that I would be running 20 years later. Like, I wouldn't think that. I don't feel it. You know, a lot of times we put limits on ourselves and that we can't do certain things once we reach a certain age or do certain things. But I just kind of tell people that anything is possible. And like, I feel better than I've ever felt, you know, so I would never think that I would be running this long ever. You'd ask me at 19, 20, like you're going to be doing 20 years later. Not this. But honestly, it's a blessing to say that I still run track and that I'm competing against the top or the best of that. I've made my 19, 20, whatever U.S. championship. It's amazing. I just want to tell people to keep going and be fearless and just, you know, every win comes with a loss and every loss comes with a win. And so,
okay, I like that. No.
So keep going with that. You know, that's why I keep my mind positive. And, you know, I work on my mind just as much as my body. So that's what I'm going to tell all the young and older people. You know, everyone caters to like, oh, the youth, that's cool. But, you know, there's people that are our age or whatever, or young or whatever, like we still have a lot more life to live and, you know, just keep living it to the fullest.
Yes. Hey, look, there's people who are aiming for their very own championship, their very own, you know, in a sense, their Olympic team. You know, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
They're somewhere and they're aiming for something else and they don't know how to go about it. And when they do start and it gets hard, they don't know that that hard part is normal. It's going to be hard, guaranteed. And you actually have to just endure through that to get where you want to get. And I think that's the part that I like bringing, you know, all you superstars on to keep saying that, like, yo, this was hard. If enough of you keep coming on like, this was hard, then I think everybody would be like, you know what? Life is hard. And if you want to accomplish anything, you're going to have to deal with some hard stuff. So let's get it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, that's pretty cool. And one cool thing about track that you did mention, because we don't want to, you know, track may not be the money sport, but you get to travel. I mean, I've been to 40 countries and I've been breaking any won any medals except a Karifta medal. I won a Karifta medal, Karifta bronze, and Bolt was in the race. So,
say they had 3 passports and been around the world like that.
Yeah, not a lot of people can say that at all.
And honestly, I think I've been blessed to say that I have had a contract and that I have made money in track. Because they always say, oh, you know, but then no, that's why a lot of people still run and stay running because you can make money.
You do make a good living.
Yeah.
You can.
And then what's the other option? You can go to corporate America and probably make almost the same thing, about $40K a year, and sit behind a desk. Wouldn't you rather do that and travel the world?
Yeah, or you can make $500,000 a year.
I know,
There's
that money.
It ain't just $40K either.
Disclaimer, this is for the really good folks. And
it's possible. We've experienced both. Some people have never had a big shoe deal, like a Nike deal or Adidas deal like that. So,
and then some people have never had
less than six figure deal.
Yeah. Some people turn down, like, I'm not taking no 200 grand. Like, what? Like, people turn down that.
Yeah.
I know at least 10 people I know, they were like, I ain't signing no deal for the low six figures. This is a track person shutting it down. Like,
that's why I said each is
different.
Each person is different. You can't really generalize it.
Or there's someone who I think doesn't have a contract, but like, wait, they make how much? Or some people that you think make all this money, like, they only make that much. It just depends.
Yeah,
it varies. Legal advice. So pretty much you need someone to help negotiate on your behalf when you're getting into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, it always is that. But it can be negotiated. Just know that it is a possibility that you can make money.
Do well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, now that's pretty cool. All right. Well, look, I'm glad you guys joined us.
Thank you guys so much for having us. This was great.
Yes, thank you guys for coming on. Thank you for sharing all your insight.
So people are going to still think it's a Gamecock podcast if I keep bringing Gamecocks on. I'm like,
you have bringing on a lot of Gamecocks. Really good. We're just going to let it slide.
Because we have so many great Gamecocks. You have to.
Mm-hmm. That's just what I mean.
I mean, it's not like it's favoritism. It's like, no, you really have.
We're that deep.
That's why
you got to just get all the games.
Have like a whole class of world champions. Like, come on.
Yeah,
at least three.
Men and women.
Yeah, so it's justified. So we'll let them slide.
I know y'all. I mean, you know, you were Illinois, right?
I'm an Illini, Big Ten.
Y'all was there.
I mean, I did what I had to do. So
I'm just playing. I like Illinois.
No, you're not playing. That's an SEC.
That's an SEC thing. But I mean, I was a lot of All American with a lot of the SECs were just on a relay. So
I'm not even gonna lie.
I'm just gonna say I did my thing.
That's all you can do. You
show up at meets like, what teams are those?
It's okay.
You ready?
The final showed up.
You race.
You saw the eye.
Yes. That's all.
What's that?
I said when the finals, you know, the last day of end season is broadcast.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You saw the eye on that day. So we didn't have to worry about when we were coming in.
No, I'm not talking about
on that day. Yeah. You saw the eye.
Illinois people, please don't chew me out either. Leave me alone. Yeah, I'm just playing with y'all. SEC do go hard, but, you know, I'm in the Ivy now, so represent.
It's all good. I can hold it down for the 10.
True. That's all that matters.
So
all right, cool. Let me know when that cooking channel gets up because I want to see what concoctions you guys put together.
New content.
Thank you for doing. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm excited to taste this. I don't know if I'm excited to taste this sort of chicken, but I'm looking forward to seeing what it come out with.
I'm gonna support though.
I just said no. All right, we'll see how this goes.
All right, ladies, appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a good one. Be safe.
All right, have a good night.
Bye. Bye.